The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Making some calls around Major League Baseball, some of the front office types that I know and who I trust to give me a straight opinion on this. I said, what do you, in the industry, when you guys look at the Cardinals, like, what do you see? Like, what's the riddle here? And the one thing that came up with the two or three guys that I talked to, they just said, look, their infrastructure is really lacking. And again, you've written about this. They have good instructors in their system. They don't have enough of them. One gentleman said, you know, I kind of feel sorry for the major league staff only because the guys that they're getting coming up through the system have not had the luxury of having so many tools that most organizations give their young hitters.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and you definitely recognize the voice from the teaser up ahead. It is, of course, the original co-founder of this podcast, the BPIB OG, if you will, Bernie Miklas. Bernie, welcome. How are you?
Man, I'm great. My day's even better now that you and I get a chance to do a little gabbing, just like old times. So thanks for inviting me. What a pleasure.
You bet. Bernie's there in St. Louis. I am in Minneapolis after a brief sojourn out to Los Angeles for the grand college move-in. I didn't miss anything with the Cardinals, did I? Holy cow. My colleagues, Lynn Worthy and Daniel Guerrero, were all over some roster upheaval. Jordan Walker optioned out, something that we saw coming. We knew it was coming almost as soon as they uttered the word platoon. Nolan Gorman out. And then, of course, you got Matt Carpenter back on the active roster, hits a home run. And Nolan Arenado hits a walk-off grand slam, his first grand slam as a Cardinal. So transactions say they're not gathering momentum, but maybe some of the results, Bernie, say they are.
Well, Arenado is very, very interesting because we know he's got power limitations, even though he hit that dramatic and huge home run for them. But he's just been piling up a lot of hits. His on-base percentage is good. And the thing of it is, you can win games with the kind of hitting he is giving you, but he needs some support. He needs some backup. So that was a highlight of the series. And I thought the Cardinals pitching, which has been going through some turbulence, really did a great job against the Brewers. I mean, the Brewers, I know they scored six runs in the middle game. They scored only three in the first game, none in the third game. So for the series, the Cardinals pitching staff had a 2.89 ERA, and their three starters had a 2.12 ERA. There were too many walks. I could find things to nitpick. But when a really good offense like the Brewers come to town, and you shut them down late and you get three pretty good starts and you do not allow a home run to that team in three games and only, I think, six extra base hits in 28 innings. That's a hell of a job by that pitching staff. And that foundation has really got to be strong if they're going to make a move, right? If they're going to try to make this close in the wild card with the sketchy offense, it's like mandatory that the pitching has got to be superb. Yeah. You know, it's got to be a foundation that can overcome quiet nights by the offense. Anyway, your turn.
No, they're good. I know I've read the comments. I've heard the comments. I've asked the questions, and you hear a lot about how if they're going to get back into this, they need the offense. And there's a lot of truth to that. But
sure.
They're at a point where they're so far back in just in the wild card race. Forget the division race.
Sure.
But they're so far back in the wild card race that they're going to need to win some 2-0 games, 1-0 game. Like, they need to stack those up too. And you're right. I mean, they can't just all of a sudden go, all right, well, our offense is going to carry us to these 7-5 wins. They got to sneak some of these one run games in where it's low scoring and the other team can't figure it out. So I think you're exactly right. I would not sleep on the importance of a Miles Michaelis strong finish if they're going to pull off the September miracle.
And I appreciate the work that Ali Marmol is done with the bullpen, and that bullpen's been stressed.
Yeah.
And I think he's moved the parts around the best that he can with what he has. And that's been one of the, to me, you know, one of the few pluses of the season. And I know a lot of our listeners or watchers will, you know, take issue with, you know, frankly, any kind of praise of Ali Marmol, but I think that that's been a strong suit of his this year. But again, it's for to and have any hope, and let's face it, the playoff odds are pretty ominous, as we all know. Mm-hmm. To have any hope, man, they can't afford to lose games late. The starters can't put them in bad spots by getting, you know, bombed out and run out of a game early. So we'll see. And I, you know, I know you want to ask the questions, but I wanted to throw one at you. You know,
sure.
With and we're going to talk about Gorman and Walker, but with those two guys out of the picture right now, I mean, who in your mind, Mr. Derek Woods, really going to have to step up, and who's capable of really stepping up in a way that would maybe enliven that offense and keep it enlivened while they try to chase these other wild card teams down?
I mean, the answer is Lars Nukbar, right? It's got to be. I mean, I'm long time listeners of this podcast, or readers will know, you know, just the stories I've written, but also like the analytics behind, like, a left-handed presence who does not make outs. If he can get his OBP going and add in a splash of doubles and stuff like that. But that is something that makes an offense go. It just, other teams have difficulty against it. And then you put in the kind of style hitter he is when he's at his best, where he can do well against velocity and maintain control of the strike zone. If, you know, I think a lot of folks would probably put their thumb on the scale towards Paul Goldschmidt to answer your question. But, you know, Lars Nukbar has had a difficult season, as he'll tell you. You know, he's not produced like he liked. You know, some of the numbers beneath the surface are better than the numbers on the baseball card, but he's still been searching. And if he can do that, he brings the blend of things, especially, and we will talk about Walker and Gorman, but especially because now, he can't be in a platoon, you got to start Lars against lefties. You don't have that, right? So you need to have him go. And we've seen this lineup, we've seen this offense when he is at his best, when he does get that 50 game stretch, and all of a sudden he's a leadoff type hitter with a little bit more punch, a little bit more sock.
No, I agree with you. And I think you and I are both, I shouldn't speak for you, but I think we're both admirers of Wilson Contreras, but he hit a little bit of a lull. He hit a lull there for a while, and I think he's coming out of it, but they need big stuff from him the rest of the way. And Donovan's going to have to, you know, get on base more.
Just not make outs. Yeah.
Donovan, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, and Burleson's, you know, pretty much a platoon player, but he's going to have to really eviscerate right-handed pitching the rest of the way. I mean, you know, Wynn's going to have to hold up strong. Maybe they'll get a surprise from Lucan Baker. I mean, that's perhaps a stretch, but you never know. To pull off what they're going to try to pull off, they need a surprise like that. So we'll see how that works out. I would say that's a bit of a long shot, but I wouldn't foreclose on the idea.
The thing with Wilson Contreras is he's so much above league average. He's been the one force of nature in the lineup all year. Right. That even like when he was in a lull, he was still like 30% better than league average, which I think was kind of lost on folks because you kind of latch onto the anecdotal stuff of like, oh man, he's struggling, or man, that swing doesn't look good, or man, he went through that Cincinnati series or whichever series it was where he really struggled. But gosh, you know, when he's been healthy, I mean, before he broke his arm, he was on his way to jousting with his brother to be the National League starter at catcher for a team that was really struggling. I mean, he was very, very productive. So much so, Bernie, that there was a little element that he was so productive at the plate that I think that lured them into more playing time for the backup catcher with Wilson at DH, that maybe contributed to some of the staccato lineup and some of the difficulty, you know, producing. Pajas did great defensively. I mean, he really did. But you look at some of their struggles against left-handed pitching when, like, it's Contreras right-handed and then the bottom of the order. You're like, well, some of that they invited.
No, I totally agree with you. And they're going to have to do better in that area. Yeah, that's high on the checklist. Maybe the highest thing on the checklist is, oh my goodness, how many words have you written and spoken about this, and how many words have I written and spoke about this? And same with all Cardinals fans. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this futility with runners in scoring position. I mean, yeah. It's just, you figure at some point, it's got to level out somewhat. I mean, we thought that, then again, you and I know this because we've talked about it. And in fact, I think you and I both, and Joe Strauss probably irritated Mike Matheny, but you know, that 2013
yeah.
team.
Oh yeah. This is going to correct.
They were great at hitting with runners scoring position. We would talk to Matheny after games, one of us, two of us, all three of us. And the question would always be like, you know, history tells us, Mike, that this will level off. You'll probably go into recession with this. And he would get pretty ticked off. And I got to give him credit.
He never did.
I mean, he was right. They finally, you know, when their RISP luck ended in the World Series, for them. Yeah, yeah. But
Know why? I mean, part of that was Alan Craig, right?
Yeah,
like Craig was a 50% guy with the runners in scoring position, which was otherworldly. Like, who does that? Right? Who doesn't make outs with runners in scoring position just about 50% of the time? Alan Craig was having just this monster year. And then, of course, the obstruction happened, the injury happened, and some of that. You know, Bernie, you'll love this because you love the history. So the Phillies were in town, and Charlie Manuel was the manager. And, you know, Charlie loves hitting, loves talking about hitting, all that stuff. And I went up to him, and I'm like, hey, what do you make of, all your history, all your experience, what do you make of what the Cardinals are doing with runners in scoring position? And he talked about how, well, you know, like that's something that's cyclical, and you figure it's going to slow down, it's going to cool off, or it's like one run games where, you know, one year it's way out of balance, but it doesn't change what the team is, or like, or he mentioned like a starter's record in afternoon games, right? Okay. And then he goes, but there's something going on here. And he goes, I think they've kind of figured it out. He goes, I don't think it's something that other teams can necessarily replicate. He goes, I think it's just the right combination of hitters with the right skill set and the right ability. And so he spelled it out as guys get on base, and this fits with like how Matheny wanted to run things, right? And Mabry and all those hitters, right? They get on base. They have a high OBP, chase the OBP, chase the league lead in OPP, right? They get on base. And then this was the Matheny thing. They get in motion, they get the infield agitated, and then they have all these right-handed bats who just power the ball up the middle, like an opposite field, right? So Charlie Manuel was like, he goes, I don't know how the numbers are, but watch, like they get a runner on base, they get it going, and all of a sudden comes up this right-handed hitter who just drives the ball where second baseman used to be, and now they get a run. And he's like, what? That's what's going on. I thought it was really fascinating. Like that he was like, they cracked it, but I don't know how other people can duplicate it. That was those right-handed hitters from Mark Budaska, and just like the real stress that, you know, you think about McGuire and the Mabry that followed on that. You get on base, make things happen.
Yeah, and that's where it all starts. So maybe any talk of the Cardinals, you know, closing the gap in the wild card race, which again is a long shot, especially with the schedule.
Yeah.
But it all starts with that. Somehow they have to catch fire, and maybe it's even batted ball luck, but they have to catch fire when they have runners in scoring position. They have to like completely reverse just the dreadful, dreadful numbers that they've been living with all season. So we'll see. You know, anytime a team's within five games, and listen, man, I'm not into spreading false optimism, as you know, I'm pretty pragmatic. But anytime you're within five games and maybe you win a series like the Brewers, one you probably weren't expected to win, especially after you lost the first game. And then some of the other teams on your schedule that very few people, relatively speaking, expect you to beat, but then you win those series. There's a chance for some momentum, but I have to remain a skeptic until we all see that they're capable of putting together something on a consistent basis. You know, one series is fine, but anyway, they're a puzzling team in a lot of ways, but the bottom line is there's just not enough talent. And when your two veteran pillars are not having years that we associate with their standards. And then maybe I don't mean to try to segue here because you're in charge, but then when two guys they were heavily counting on to be the next set of pillars, Walker and Gorman, and they just, those pillars just fell down this year. It's pretty tough to sustain any kind of high scoring offense. It's just really, really, really tough. And that's probably the reason why the odds are stacked against them.
I'm glad you brought them up. And earlier you mentioned all the words that you've written. So I wanted to dive into some of the words that you've recently written for Scoops with Danny Mac. That is, of course, Dan McLaughlin's website. You're part of the Scoops Network. You write Burn Baby Burn there. And this past week, you know, a story you wrote got attention. I read it, and then I had a few folks send it to me too. So what better way to introduce the topic and the discussion than to read directly from your story. So I'm going to do that here, Bernie. Headline is Bernie, what are the Cardinals doing to Jordan Walker's career? Intervene, Bill DeWitt Jr., and put an end to this madness. Imagine what it would be like for Jordan Walker if he'd been drafted by an organization that knew what the heck it was doing in the development of players. And as Walker returns to the minors after spending a weird and wasted week with the Cray Cray Cardinals, he should think of the more pleasant times ahead, Bernie Miklas writes. Unless something big and bold and decisive takes place to change the trajectory of this troubled franchise, Walker will one day be dealt to a more astute organization that knows how to develop young hitters. I mean, that's the trend, right? Like, I was really struck by the fact that, that Dylan Carlson is traded, and within 24 hours, we're all looking at the outfield going, well, there's a new Dylan Carlson. Like, don't they simplify and then they replace. They simplify and then replace, and they just have this import-export business of outfielders that is just remarkable.
I like that phrase. Good job. I like that phrase a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a pattern. It's an unmistakable pattern, and neither one of us is going to sit here and say, well, they haven't done well with young hitters. I mean, they've done well with Burleson, although you give a big
Mason Wynn.
Mason Wynn for sure. And Burleson.
Yeah.
Burleson gets the best – perhaps career-changing advice, not from a coach or a manager, but from Matt Carpenter. Well, I guess he's kind of a coach. So, yeah, we've seen, you know, some success, but, man, there have been so many washouts, and it's kind of scary because if they can't get Gorman and Walker to perform consistently at a high level, and then you look at what's – I don't mean to jump ahead here, but you look at what's coming – what's the next wave of young hitting talent? They have, you know, JJ Weatherholt, I'm sure, is an exciting prospect, but I have hopes for a Thomas Sagacy, but let's look at it. It's not like they have this big, huge wave of young hitting talent on the way. And then even whatever got, maybe Chase Davis.
One big show.
Yeah. But when, yeah, there you go. And then maybe, you know, a couple of those guys can change this trajectory, but it's really tough for me to have confidence and to assume any young hitter is going to reach his potential with the big club. He may play, have a good year, might have a good year and a half, but then when things start to break down, no one seems to know how to fix it. And that's a really troubling pattern, and maybe that'll change if they make some changes in the organizations. But I can't, as I said earlier, you know, I have a hard time ginning up false optimism on this. You know, the performance matters, and the trend matters, and the patterns matter.
Well, Mason Wynn went to Jeff Albert's hitting camp, and one of the things, like they're kind of like off season hitting instructional camp there that they built the barn for at Jupiter, and he was one of the hitters who went there. There were other young hitters that went there. You know, Alec Burleson worked there on stuff. Mason came out of there like a different hitter, like, and so much so that really the whole pitching side to his two-way play from his draft became like, no, that you don't need to do that. You're going to hit well enough, and you're going to have this athleticism that translates into offensive production to make this work at shortstop, and you're clearly dynamic defensively. But I remember talking to Mason before he went there and what kind of offensive player he was coming out of high school and into the draft and then into the the auxiliary camp there during 2020, and then how he talked about hitting after going through the Jeff Albert, Steinhorn, all that group, and what they did with the young hitters. So that's a way to introduce the notion, Bernie, that if there are changes in the organization, and this is like what really fascinates me and probably frustrates the front office and the manager, though the manager less so, because he does entertain my questions about this. He did from the beginning, and he then references multiple times through the last year and a half our conversation that we had in Miami. We had a long conversation about this. And here's the thing. Do they need to change? When you talk about changes in the organization, do you think it's changes in instructors? Do you think it's changes in culture? Because one of the things that stands out to me, and I tried to hope I captured this a little bit in the story I wrote recently, is the Brewers feel like they have patience on their side because they can have a down year every so year. The Cardinals always act with like this urgency that now has sometimes become chaos because they feel they can't have a down year. That patience paid off with Yelich. It didn't pay off with Ozuna. That patience has paid off with Jackson Churio, who really struggled out of the gate, but then continued to get playing time. And now here the Cardinals are with Jordan Walker. So, and Nolan Gorman. So that's, I guess, what I want to present to you is like, if they change personnel, if they change instructors, if they change who's running the development, will that person just fit into this culture that has this strain of impatience, you know, that is either masquerading as urgency or masquerading as the need to compete or really directly tied to it? And if so, then how do you shake that up?
Great questions. And it's such a puzzle to put together. Now, number one, and I know that you have written about this and you've alluded to it on multiple occasions, and I'm very much on this too. I've been making some calls around Major League Baseball, some of the front office types that I know who I trust to give me a straight opinion on this. I said, like, what do you in the industry, when you guys look at the Cardinals, like, what do you see? Like, what's the riddle here? And the one thing that came up with the two or three guys that I talked to, they just said, look, their infrastructure is really lacking. And again, you've written about this, so this is nothing new to you. And I said, what do you
I'm
mean?
I'm really eager to hear what they say.
Yeah. So, well, you know, I said, well, yeah, what do you mean about infrastructure? You know, let's get more specific. He said, listen, they have good instructors in their system. They don't have enough of them. They don't have enough. They don't
so
have,
true.
They do not have enough staffing in the minor league level. And one gentleman said, you know, I kind of feel sorry for the major league staff only because the guys that they're getting coming up through the system have not had the luxury of having so many tools that most organizations give their young hitters. And mm-hmm. so when they run into a real big problem, all of a sudden it's kind of, what do we do? Their infrastructure is real, especially for an organization of the Cardinals stature, the franchise. I mean, it's really ridiculous if you think about it. I mean, how can you be lacking? You know, listen, no one expects Bill DeWitt to go, hey, whatever it takes, we're going to sign Juan Soto. No, they're not going to live in that world. But the glaring need to draft and develop pitching and young hitters who reach their potential at the major leagues and they stay there, how can you be understaffed? How can you not have the most up-to-date technology available for your guys? So I think this is a much deeper issue of, well, the Cardinals need to sign this guy. They need to trade this guy. They need to, you know, they need to get this coach. They need to get that. I think the real issue starts beneath the surface in the minor leagues. And that's something, and I assume Hein Bloom is taking a long look at that. So we'll see what happens. Yeah. But I wonder about the culture. And listen, my friend, you are in a better position to know this than I am because I'm not around the club and you're always around the club. But
except for like the past week.
Well, hey, man, hey, you got to be
dad.
You got to be super dad sometime, right? Yeah. Anyway, I wonder about the culture. And I also don't want to pin everything on Goldschmidt and Arenado. But let's face it. I mean, Goldie, someone told me, and I can't remember for the life of me, said Goldie's one of the greatest guys you'll ever encounter. And he's such a true pro. Mm-hmm. But he would have made an ideal Olympic athlete. because it's like, I got to do this. I got to do this. Let me work. Let me study this. Let me study that. Oh, I'll try this. And he's like totally focused on what he can do better. And he's not, my impression is he's not one of these guys that's like really proactive. And that's okay. That doesn't make him a bad leader, but maybe they need more proactive guys who have stature. Mm-hmm. Arenado, negative energy when things are going bad. We all know that. I mean, the negative energy doesn't help things, but I also respect the fact that he's so intense and he gets so disappointed with himself. So I'm going to throw that back at you. And I do think maybe they need a change on the major league staff. If this staff stays in place, I think they need to hit the refresh button on batting instructors. And I know that's always the number one scapegoat, but I think in this case it's valid. Anyway, I'm going to throw this back at you. When these young hitters start to turn, they start to sour.
Yeah.
The people that are in place in the Cardinals clubhouse, whether it be coaching, whether it be veteran players, do these young guys get extra stressed out, which makes it worse because there's no one there that can sort of take them by the scruff of the neck and lead them to a solution or more confidence or whatever? I mean, do they suffer from any type of cultural deficiencies in that clubhouse? That question is much better for you to answer than me.
Yeah. I mean, you hit on so much there, and that it gets back to kind of the crux of the conversation I had with Oliver Marmol, is this notion of opportunity, or what I wrote, and we keep quoting ourselves a little bit, but what I wrote there at that All-Star game with Randy Rosarena and Adolis Garcia and Zach Gallen, all in that All-Star game there in Seattle, this notion of the opportunity gap, right? You could throw Lane Thomas into the group. What opportunity were these young guys going to get? What opportunity did Randy Rosarena? Excuse me there.
Sure.
Could they, and we see it happening now with Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman. Like, Jordan Walker returns and they say he's a platoon player. Well, what kind of opportunity does that give him? I mean, he goes out there, has a good game, but no, he's not going to play the next day, the next 2 days. He had a really strong couple of weeks there in Memphis, comes up to the majors to provide a right-handed bat against left-handed pitching, and knows immediately that any sort of momentum is going to stall. You know, Lane Thomas takes off and is going to get a lot of playing time, gets injured. Randy Rosarena, who is hit at every level but doesn't satisfy the Cardinals' defensive aspect. I mean, these are all tales that we know by heart now, and they all end with the player going elsewhere to get more opportunity to play through difficulties, to play through things. And, you know, I think it's really interesting that we see the Cardinals at times – Alec Burleson goes through difficulties, or they need him to adjust his swing. Jordan Walker, they need him to get off the ground more, continue to hit the ball hard, but hit it in the air more, which all makes sense, right? And they then do it in the cage. They then, 2 days in the cage, they did, you know, and then they come back and they get into the lineup, and maybe they go 0-3, 0-4. And Marmol talks about how Goldschmidt is going like, you know, the things he's working on aren't manifesting into the game, right? Well, shouldn't you then find that out with the young guys too? Like, if you have them working on these things, and I understand that you can't go and take 100 swings working on a new swing and then be asked to be at your best for that game. I get it. Your work days are good. But the inconsistent playing time, and then what has happened this year with the pressure to win now. That's right. Like, that's the added on. Like, they've always had this culture of perform now because we're always in contention. Now it's added this element of like, we cannot have another losing season. We cannot have this. It's like, it has become this pressurized cooker, like inside of the old coffee. I mean, you can feel it.
Right.
You can feel it in spring training. You feel even worse now. And that leads to, well, a young guy, and that's not anything that is coming from the clubhouse. That's coming from the club, is this feeling of like, you're 0-4 today. Well, you're not going to play. I mean, that can just crush a young player, right, if that's what they're feeling, that they have to go 7-3 to start the next day. And they are aware of this, like this notion that like, they just haven't given some of these guys the long run to see what they could do. Reasons for that are, for Lars, it's injury, right? He's only had one 50-game stretch in the majors in his career, and what a 50-game stretch it was. Some of it is, again, Dylan Carlson injured, but some of it, too, was fickleness. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Lane right. Thomas was injury. Randy Arozarena, and then he was surpassed by Harrison Bader. Randy Arozarena was choice, putting the thumb on defense, which I don't think anybody would argue. Same thing benefited what hurt Randy Arozarena is the same thing that benefited Michael Cianni. And look how he grew as an offensive right. player.
No, isn't that interesting?
And right. Here's the big one. Mason
Such a great
Wynn.
Point. Such
Mason
a great
Wynn
point.
Got to play. He got to play. He got the Yadier Molina play, right? You are so good defensively, you're going to be in the lineup most every day. We're going to protect your back. We're going to protect it. We're going to have Brandon Crawford mix in a little bit, but you are going to play. You go out there, you go 0-for-4, you're in the lineup the next day. And what happened? I don't know if the Cardinals workshop, they think through a lot of stuff. I would love to know if during spring training, they discussed Mason Wynn being their leadoff hitter at some point in time. And yet there he is. He's their leadoff hitter. What a growth for him offensively. And you know when Alec Burleson took off? When he played a lot and got to see all that work in the cage start translating to live action pitching. The playing time for Alec Burleson was forced upon them. The playing time for Mason Wynn was a choice by them. And they see the clear payoff. And yet, for some odd reason, the club gets impatient on right. other hitters and moves on.
Well, back to just Walker and Gorman as a tandem, so to speak. Just for people on the outside, and I wouldn't blame any fans for going bananas over this, and because I did too. Maybe I enjoy comfort in numbers or whatever. No, I yeah. really honestly went bananas over this, but to go inside of that a little bit. All right. Jordan Walker was brought up because not only was he doing really great in Memphis, but it was like, well, we hope you Mozeliak said this. I think Ali said this. It's like, well, we were hoping he would come up here and just like catch fire, you know? And then it's just like, then we'd have something really, we're really adding something that can make a difference. So how did you want him to catch fire? And he starts 3 of 6 games and he didn't play at all in 2 other of the 6 games.
Yeah.
How do you expect him to quote catch fire? Like if his first start, he's not, you know, 3-for-4 with a double you're on the bench now, son. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, they were waiting for Nolan Gorman to catch fire again. And they waited and they waited and they waited. And they waited and they waited and he kept drowning. I mean, just going down, 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 totally lost confidence blown. So one guy who's one of their gems, it's like they gave him a week and didn't even play him full time. And then it's almost like, well, you got to go back to Memphis. But with Nolan Gorman, who's just got one of the most horrendous sets of numbers I've ever seen over two and a half months, they let him get worse. And by the day,
yeah,
and it took them two months and like 17 days to intervene and get him to Memphis. So one guy, it's like you almost couldn't wait to get him back down to Memphis. The other guy, who really did require an intervention, you just sat and watched and sat and watched, and he's just going further down the drain. And so on both ends of those spectrum, I don't understand the thinking. One guy, they didn't give enough a chance to. The other guy, they were way too patient with, to the point where the poor dude's confidence was wiped out. And a young hitter with no confidence is not going to turn things around. I think a reset would have been a really smart play for Gorman. And he has shown in the past when he does have a reset at Memphis or whatever, he comes back better. So
yeah.
Anyway, I didn't mean to belabor the point, but
no, I think
I'm struck by the contrast there.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, we got about 2 minutes left. I'm going to do the radio thing. We got about 2 minutes left before to hit a break, Bernie. No, did I do that right?
Yeah.
But I think you hit on a really big thing is the Cardinals were ultimately reactive and there on their schedule, right there, and it wasn't like it wasn't being asked about, and I know it wasn't like it wasn't being talked about, was this opportunity to be proactive. What do they have? 5 left-handed pitchers in 7 days, 5 in 8 days or something like that, right? And they did not make a move for Jordan Walker ahead of that. They did right. not make a move for Luken Baker ahead of that. They kept Nolan Gorman on the roster. They had a chance there to make a proactive move. And, you know, like, hey, these lefties are coming. And there's a good chance that you're going to face an additional one in Cincinnati. Why not make the move at that point in time? So, you know, about a minute left, Bernie, how does this end? I mean, do you see that? Are the Cardinals just on this constant treadmill of trading the next all-star?
I'll throw it right on the table. Until there's a change in leadership, because I think the time has come, and I'm talking about front office leadership as well. I mean, we've seen enough of this stuff. It's going to have to take new eyes, new vision, new thinking to come up with a better plan or a better way of doing things. Unless there is a substantial change, I don't see how it could get better, because this has been a maddening cycle for quite a while now.
Maddening cycle is a great phrase for it. That is Bernie Miklas, the great Bernie, longtime columnist at the St. Louis Post.
By the way, let me be a shill for myself. YouTube.com/
I was going to get to it. I was
Bernie
get to
Show.
It.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, I know we're short on time.
Yeah,
it's going
I was going to get to it. So you can find his work.
What a jerk I am. I'm cutting you off to try to.
No, it's all right. I'm going to give you the pub so you can
Shame
find his
on
work.
Me.
It's no, I wanted to like, I was going for the big build. It's all right. You can find his work at Scoops with Danny Mac. That's Burn Baby Burn. You can Google it, search it, or just go straight to Scoops and you'll find it. Bernie, you have a new Twitter address. What is it?
It's at B_Miklas, my last name. And I'm slowly building that back. It's been great.
And then the YouTube thing. Tell me about that.
The YouTube channel that I started, Bernie Show YouTube, is less than 3 weeks in. And man, I've been blown away by, you know, the traffic and the subscribers and the views and the watch hours. And so it's headed in a really nice direction. And that's what I wanted. I kind of want to become more of an independent contractor. So
great.
Here
well,
we
you
go.
Always, you always have a home here at BPIB, one of the founding fathers of BPIB up there in your attic. And it's great to have you. Look for his work there. That, of course, is the award-winning Hall of Fame sports writer, Bernie Miklas. You can find his work again at Scoops with Danny Mac in there on YouTube. You can find the best podcast in baseball anywhere you get your podcast, including STLtoday.com, which is where all the constant Cardinals coverage is from the Post Dispatch. The St. Louis, or the best podcast in baseball, brought to you weekly by Closet by Design in St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and we're running out of time. So for Bernie Miklas, thank you all for listening to us. We'll be back with another BPIB. Thank you so much, Bernie.
See, thanks, Derek. I love being here.